Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is the Happy Hour.
You guys going to Happy Hour?
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America.
Yeah, maybe I'll come for a couple.
Here are your hosts, Nick Sainert.
I am a huge guy.
And Enrique Alvarez Cleary.
C is for chunk.
Brought to you by Empire Fence and Netting on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome in. Happy Friday. It's the Happy Hour for one final time before we hand things off back to Adam Carriker on Monday from 12 to 1 p.m. Nick Sainert and Rico. What's up, Rico?
Yeller.
How's the day?
Fantastic.
Good.
It's getting ready to start snowing this weekend.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I just saw a model that says a weather model.
Oh, never mind.
That says 6 to 8 inches of snow in the Lincoln area. Omaha around that 4 to 6 inches of snow area. So probably somewhere in the middle, around like 5 inches.
Fantastic. Please be safe. They're already treating the streets. You watch them, you see them driving by.
Which shout out to the Lincoln crew, Transportation Utilities, I believe is who handles all that, because friends of the station, number one. Number two, shout out to them, because there was the couple weeks ago when we had all that ice.
Ugh.
Everybody was freaking out about the freezing rain.
Yep.
And you saw all the videos up in Omaha of cars like sliding down residential streets.
Slipping and sliding all over the place.
I didn't have any issues. And from what I gathered from other people, nobody really had issues in Lincoln. And that was a very busy night, because that was the night that Nebraska basketball played Indiana. Mm-hmm. That was the night that Nebraska volleyball hosted Dayton. It was a busy athletics evening in the city of Lincoln, and nobody had issues getting around the capital city.
Both places were packed, so it's not like people weren't driving around. There were people all over the place, and I didn't hear about any injuries or any types of accidents in the Lincoln area and the Star City.
And it's different, and they have like a method to where they use sand or salt, and it's like there's a specific method to when they want to use one mm-hmm. over the other. And so there's actually there's science and like research
it's
put into it.
It's very scientific, and it's just like, if it's going to be this temperature, it's going to be this type of precipitation, you can't use this, you have to use this, or if we use this, it'll only make it worse, or it'll make it slush or slimy or whatever. So you got to go to street salting school or something.
Yeah, we'll call it good. 402-464-5685, the Honda of Lincoln hotline, and the Starter Heyman text line are open for you guys the entire show today. It's going to be a good one today. It's going to go quick, as we have 1 hour and a lot of stuff to get to. Obviously, Notre Dame knocks off Georgia yesterday afternoon. Notre Dame one win away from a college football national championship appearance under Marcus Freeman. So we'll dive into the Marcus Freeman, Brian Kelly discussion at LSU. But then also on top of that is on the other side of the bracket, Ohio State and Texas, and whether or not Ohio State even has to, I mean, they have to be concerned with it, but with the way that they're playing, it looks like whoever they face in the semifinals, whether it would have been Oregon or whether it would have been Arizona State or Texas, they are on such a roll right now, it doesn't even matter. And then on the other side, obviously, with Notre Dame and Penn State, talk parity in college football as the playoff has kind of opened some eyes, and we'll kind of look at the playoff as a big picture. But then at 12:30, we're going to change gears and focus on Husker men's basketball. We'll actually be joined by Peyton Borders, the recruiting coordinator of Nebraska men's basketball, ahead of tomorrow's game against 15th-ranked UCLA. Obviously, with that in mind, with UCLA, what kind of challenge do the Bruins pose for Nebraska? We'll talk recruiting with the recruiting coordinator, obviously, Coach Borders. And then also Bryce Williams, the type of season that he's having, what's that do and how much value does that bring for Nebraska in the recruiting game when they see transfers, like whether it's Juwan, whether it's Bryce, when they see guys like that making an impact early on and throughout their entire careers in Lincoln, What does that do for the future? And talking about recruiting the next group of transfer portal guys, we'll talk to Nebraska basketball's recruiting coordinator, Peyton Borders, here around 12:30. He texted and said practice slated to get done around 12:15. Might go a couple minutes late, so we're kind of on a play-it-by-ear type of basis.
Just call him while he's at practice. It'll be fine.
When Peyton joins us. Once again, 402-464-5685, the Honda of Lincoln hotline, and the Starter Heyman text line are open for you. You can always reach out to myself or Rico on Twitter, Nick_Sainer or at Radio Rico AC. Let's start with college football. Notre Dame knocks off Georgia yesterday. Rico, are you surprised? Because you picked Georgia to knock off the Irish. Are you surprised by the finish?
I'm surprised by how lopsided it was. I'm surprised with how dominant Notre Dame was against Georgia. I said it on the air. I wanted Notre Dame to win, but I'm picking Georgia to win because I just thought that the athletes that they had, the speed that Georgia had all around, all up and down their roster, mm-hmm. would, you know, be able to pick apart the Notre Dame defense. And boy, was I wrong. Notre Dame's defense is on another level. Yeah. They neutralized Georgia's speed from the get-go. And really, they're on their backup quarterback, and it showed.
Well, and Steven on the text line, 464-5685, makes a great point. Georgia made a huge mistake by not just running the clock out at the end of the second quarter, and that dramatically changed the game. You're absolutely right, because I said it earlier this morning, and I'll repeat it, in that there was a moment, it was 6-3 Notre Dame after they converted on the field goal with like 47 seconds left in the second quarter, mm-hmm. I believe. And we saw this was, I mean, poor mismanagement by staffs, whether it was Texas or now Georgia and Kirby Smart. Now, Mike Bobo, the former Colorado State head coach, calls the offensive plays for the Bulldogs, while Steve Sarkisian calls the plays for the Longhorns. Well, Sark, 2 days ago, only in a crucial moment in the fourth quarter, ran three consecutive pass plays. It took 16 seconds of game time off the clock, and it allowed Arizona State at least an opportunity to go down and win the game on a last-second field goal, or if they would have scored a touchdown, made it even more likely that the Sun Devils were going to win. Ultimately, when it was all said and done, Arizona State had to punt the ball away. But still, that's one of those sequences in the game where you look back and say, if this would have happened, there would have been two things. The conversation right before Bert Auburn went out to kick the field goal, and his play-calling decisions from the plus side of the 50-yard line, where he called three consecutive pass plays. It was three incompletions in a row, and Texas had to attempt a very long field goal.
That would have been one of those sequences where you look back at the end of the game, if the result had been flipped, yeah. and you look back and you're immediately second-guessing yourself, like, why did we do
this? Yeah, you point to it and say, well, even with an injury at the running back position at the start of the year, Texas has been able to run the ball pretty efficiently
very well
all season long with Contravius Wisner and then Jaden Blue in the backfield, that, once again, why not give them an opportunity to bleed some clock? Maybe they get a 10 or an 8-yard gain, and it makes a much more manageable field goal for an experienced kicker like Bert Auburn.
And you've been running the ball pretty well all game.
Yeah, at certain times, right?
Especially while
Quinn Ewers is not the healthiest of quarterbacks
exactly
available for Texas. So that was one. But to Steven's point yesterday, yeah, and the announcers on ESPN even mentioned it too, to where if Carson Beck is in there, their offense is on hyperdrive and they're trying to score. But the difference between an experienced quarterback that's going to enter the draft in Carson Beck and a freshman making his first career start on the biggest stage of the season in Garrett Stockton, it's dramatically different. And while you can trust both guys to run the plays necessary and the expectation and standard doesn't change, there also is something to be said about being smarter than more so aggressive. And Georgia needed to do that yesterday. Strip sack, obviously, on the first play from scrimmage. And then they, you know, Notre Dame
just a landslide from there
on a play action pass where, frankly, Georgia's defensive, or, you know, the secondary bit on it so poorly. And it just allowed a nice ball from Riley Leonard to find big number five in the end zone.
Riley Leonard, who does not throw the ball all that much.
No. On top of that, frankly, Riley Leonard's legs were the only source of offense early on in the mm-hmm. game and even into the third quarter, because with the special teams touchdown on the kickoff return at the start of the third quarter, Notre Dame had little to no offensive success in maintaining and stringing together long drives, sustainable drives, other than when they used Riley Leonard in the running game.
Yep.
And so, like, give credit to Georgia's defense to a certain extent, even earlier on, because they were able to shut down guys like Jeremiah Love in the backfield. They allowed Jordan Faison to have some receptions, but that's also going to happen on just some athletic catches and athletic routes.
You're going to get yours.
But for the most part, Notre Dame, both offenses, whether it was Georgia and whether it was Notre Dame, both offenses were kind of shut down and points were at a premium. And so Notre Dame, they would have been happy going into the lead, into the half with a 6-3 lead, knowing that they get the ball to start quarter number three. Mm-hmm. But then on top of that, they were able to get a momentum building play in a strip sack fumble where they recover it on the inside the 30-yard line. And Riley Leonard's able to throw a pass. And in one play, it's quickly a 13-3 game at half. And then in the blink of an eye to start the third quarter, it's now a 20-3.
It's just over at that point, especially with the way that the Georgia offense had been not doing anything. That was it. That was the nail in the coffin, that third quarter score for Notre Dame pretty much put it out of reach for Georgia, unfortunately. And the SEC is really struggling in this bowl season, in this playoff season, to figure out how to win games, aside from their newcomer, Texas.
Yeah. And so it's a weird dynamic. I mentioned this narrative also on the show this morning, and I want to get Rico's thoughts on it, as well as if you missed any of the content this morning, I want to get your guys' thoughts. 464-5685. And there's quite a bit of, we're seeing parity through all the negative comments about the transfer portal and guys moving on. And there's certainly negatives in that area of the game. But there's also some positives, to where we mentioned it yesterday on yesterday's show, where Arizona State had Texas transfers that were making impacts for the Sun Devils, and vice versa, where Arizona State guys were transferring to Texas. You're going to get the ones that obviously make changes, to where like a guy from Ohio State will go to a program that's not as successful and he'll make some impacts, but you won't see it on the college football playoff stage. But what we're also realizing is a lot of these guys will transfer from premier program to another premier program. Mm-hmm. And the one that I'm thinking most about is Caleb Downs at Ohio State. Caleb Downs was at Alabama last year. And he was at Alabama last year, earned all SEC honors, and transfers to another premier program, to where he is now one of the few unanimous selections to the All-American team in the country as just a sophomore. Mm-hmm. And so while the transfer portal can be poor and a negative thing for maybe some of the smaller programs, in the top echelon of schools and in the college football playoffs specifically, it's creating a lot of interesting storylines, to where you have a guy like Riley Leonard who transferred from Duke. Duke's playing in a bowl game against Ole Miss and gets the break speed off of him. Mm-hmm. But Riley Leonard's now making this dramatic and big impact on the biggest stage against a program in Georgia that's building a dynasty. Mm-hmm. And so through it all, like it's creating an opportunity for an Arizona State to be competitive against Texas. And it's creating an opportunity maybe even for Boise State, if they're able to go out and get a quality quarterback, or able to go out and replace Ashton Gentry with a high volume running back. It gives them a chance to compete.
Yeah. They thought that they had found their quarterback of the future, but he entered the portal again, the USC transfer.
Malachi Nelson,
but he entered the portal once again. But I don't think it's that much. I don't think it's that bad for the smaller schools, although you are going to lose your top talent. If they have, you know, a good year or two good years, they'll end up going to a premier program to showcase their skills on a bigger stage. But at the same time, you have the ability as a smaller program to get some of those guys who maybe you were never going to be in the running for. Those guys who the middle four stars, or some of the high four stars that just don't cut it at those premier programs, they enter the portal. They'll end up going to a Boise State or in this case, an Arizona State, even though they're in a Power Four conference. You'll have a guy who out of high school was thought to be Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, Michigan, schools like that. He goes there, just doesn't cut it, but he's still got a ton of talent. It's just not to the same level as the other guys in front of him. He ends up going to one of those smaller schools and balls out. And that's how you get a school like Boise State into the college football playoff, because you'll have guys who have all of the talent in the world, just aren't as talented as two or three guys at their position at a certain school.
There's certainly something to be said about maybe they need to reseed. Or I'd be curious in getting some thoughts from like coaches after, and this is like a conversation at like Big Ten media days, that we could have with like Ryan Days of the world and Dan Lanning. I suppose Dan Lanning would probably have a little bit more of a feeling on it. Like, how valuable is a bye?
All the bye teams lost.
Well, yeah, that part, but, and that's probably not going to be the thing going forward, but I do wonder like how valuable the extra week off is. When you are already, when you've already played and your schedule's kind of accustomed to 12 consecutive weeks with, yeah, there's one bye worked in there, but you go back to some of the like the quarterfinal matchups it would be the first round matchups.
Yeah.
The first round matchups and the teams like Texas against Clemson, they started out slow. And the Notre Dames of the world offensively, once again, started out slow. And you had like Penn State did not. I mean, they had SMU, so they were fine. But
rude.
Like Ohio State and Tennessee started out extremely slow.
Yep.
So I wonder now with the extended time off, it's not just 1 week off for these teams that have byes. Mm-hmm. We're talking full months.
Yeah.
Off.
They're off and, for a really long time.
And Amon Green said it earlier today, talking about, you know, when they would play and have so much time off that they would do two full scrimmages of like 80 plays per scrimmage to try to simulate a game as best you can. And
it's hard now because of the restrictions that they place on practices. You
very
can't go
different.
Full pads all that much. You can't go, and if you're not going full pads, you can't hit all that much.
Yeah.
So they have so many things that they have to try to work in and try to keep these guys going from when their season ended. Maybe they were on a roll. All of a sudden, you've got a whole month off if you're Boise State. And I understand before the game, they were talking about how Ashton Jeanty said he finally felt like his body was back to where it was at the beginning of the season.
Yeah,
I get that. But at the same time, your offensive line isn't blocking for you. You're not hitting these holes at the same clip that you were hitting at the end of the season. I understand that you're feeling fresher, but maybe it was just that your body was on a roll and your muscles were ready to go at all times. And now you've had so much time off, it's just a little relaxing. And I understand that you feel better, but it takes something away from you because you notice that all those teams that had byes started, like you mentioned, they were starting slow. A lot of those teams were starting slow, but at the same time, I feel like you want to keep that bye in there because if you, aside from Clemson, if you win your conference championship, if you're playing in your conference championship, you're playing an extra week that those other teams that are playing in that first round aren't playing. So you get that extra week off for rest and to get ready for that game. But at the same time, they're playing that week before, so they're ready to go when they come to you.
It creates this weird conversation, and I don't want to be like, this is not where I'm trying to go with this conversation. It is not necessarily comparing what's the value of a conference title versus a national championship and the opportunity to play for a national championship, because the easiest answer and conclusion from it is, well, guess what? If you win your conference title, you're automatically earning a spot. You don't have to try to work on it at the at-large bid. So you're kind of creating this difficult scenario, I guess, because a team like Oregon is going to sit here and go, yeah, we had to play an extra week, but then we had 3 weeks off because of it. We would have rather played in the quarterfinal, but then guess what? That doesn't mean we would have had to earn the at-large bid instead of the automatic bid. So it's like
to win your conference championship?
And your answer is yes, from a competitive standpoint. Number two, there's incentives built into contracts.
Oh, yeah.
And then you automatically know you have a spot in the playoff, and that gives you a chance to win the games, and that's why you play the games. And it creates this like this whole roundabout, very difficult discussion, I guess, because are buys how valuable are the buys? And maybe after 1 year and one college football playoff, we don't have enough data.
Yeah,
we're going to need this for 2-3 years.
Next year, all four of the teams with buys could win.
Yeah, and all the higher seeds, but also like, for those that complain about buys, this is the exact reason, or about the seeding. This is the exact reason. This is the perfect example of why it was important for college football to expand the bracket.
Yep.
Because
you wouldn't have had these four teams.
You wouldn't have had these four teams in the top four. you would have had them playing in a quote unquote meaningless bowl game.
Granted, Arizona State and Boise State also wouldn't have been in the playoff.
That is correct. It would have been Texas taking Boise's spot.
Yes.
And whether it was Arizona, well, Arizona State would have been in.
No, they weren't a top four. Was it automatic with the four teams? Was it win your conference, you're automatically in, or was it the top four? Because Florida State won the ACC, didn't get in.
That's correct. Well, and part of Florida State's, though, was that Jordan Travis was not available.
Yeah, Georgia was missing their quarterback.
Yeah, but there's the SEC champion. Like, we don't care.
Florida State was the SEC champ.
We also saw, I mean, there was a point yesterday in the afternoon game where we saw the officials start to try to call it against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I will say there was a couple pass interference calls where they were bad. And then right out of the gates, I mean, there was a couple of missed defensive holdings. In comparison to the targeting penalty and in conversation with the targeting penalty the previous day, it's you have to ask the question, is that a targeting call in the first quarter? If your answer is yes, then it needs to be a targeting call in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. If your answer is no, then it can't be one in the fourth quarter. And I think the majority of people, myself included, felt like that was a clearly and by rule a targeting. It fell under the umbrella of the targeting call. And whether it's the first, third, or fourth quarter doesn't really matter. And that's why you lead to believe that there's brand bias still in the officiating world.
My thing is, I could see where you don't call that targeting because it seemed, if you're going full speed, it didn't seem like he lowered his head. It looked like it was just face-to-face, helmet-to-helmet contact in that aspect. But then when you slowed it down, you saw the head kind of drop a little bit, and that's just kind of what you do when you go in for it. Like, your head just kind of drops. Like, you don't go in for attack with your face up.
But it's the defenseless player piece of it. And then on top of that, that's where I think personally, if I was the commissioner, which I'm not, I'm never going to be.
You might be.
But if I was in charge of switching up rules, it creates somewhat of like a tiered system where it's a flagrant one, flagrant two, because that way, if it is incidental contact, because things happen like that, and you can somewhat model it after the college basketball
flagrant
rules, to where if there's incidental contact to the neck or head in area and it was on a defenseless player, then yeah, it's a flagrant one and it's a 15-yard penalty and automatic first down. But it just seems so aggressive and over the top that some of these do get called, and it results in an ejection and you know, the following two quarters, that player has to sit out of the football game.
You and Connor Stallions.
Sure. I guess me and Connor Stallions.
He has the same idea.
But no, whether it's three or two, I don't really care. I think if you get it to three, then three or more, then you're talking about really nitpicky. I think if you're able to look at it, and this is kind of how I felt 2 days ago when we watched the game. And I say 2 days ago because my days are all messed up. So Wednesday when we watched the game, was that if I can look at it and in the first 30 seconds or 10 seconds go, yeah, you know what? That's targeting. Or if I can go the opposite effect and say, you know what? That's not targeting. Mm-hmm. Then you trust your gut. Like, you need your gut instinct.
Completely non-biased.
And that's it. Take away the names, take away the jerseys, take away the helmets. It doesn't matter. If the defender, it's defender versus wide receiver in this part.
I bet they call that if Arizona State was the ones making the hit.
And so I guess part of this, and this is what Thunder Not Collins says, he goes, swim, that's me, you can't have levels for a penalty that seemingly is not cut and dry on what actually constitutes a penalty. And that's where, I mean, we joked about it on the drive because AD and I kind of got into it over text about it. And AD said over text, he mentioned something about, you know, they need to call it only if it's egregious. Well, that's what targeting is essentially in my eyes, is where it's forcible contact to the head or neck area, and in this case, on a defenseless player.
You can't just call it when somebody gets knocked out.
Yeah, and so there's differences, and rules are in place. Everybody wants to worry about protecting the offensive guy. We got to remember that this is also in line to protect the defensive guy as well. And you know, there's tiers for other penalties.
David Firmino said there's tiers for roughing the kicker, running into, roughing. Like,
yeah,
it's like 5 yards for running into, 15 yards for roughing.
And so there's always going to be in sports and in officiating, whether it's baseball, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, it doesn't matter. There's always going to be subjectivity, and there's always going to be the human element in officiating. And I think that's part of what makes sports exciting, intriguing, and kind of leaves you on the edge of your seat, because there are better referees and better officials than others. And so on top of that, if you have somewhat of a tiered system with like flagrant one or targeting one and targeting two, yeah, there is some where, you know what, there's forcible contact and it's obvious that the defender lunged or led with his entire body weight.
Turn himself into launched, a missile.
You know, they use the word launched all the time. And plus that forcible contact. But then there's instances where on Wednesday, it should have been a penalty and should Taff have been maybe ejected? Sure, by rule. But I don't know if necessarily you needed to kick him out or eject him. But did Arizona State deservingly so by rule? Should they have gotten the 15-yard penalty and automatic first down? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And since it happened on the biggest stage of that moment, in that moment, that is what's creating this conversation around the country. And so they can take, in my eyes, some of the subjectivity, some of the human element out of the game and keep it, you know, objectively, is it a penalty? Is it not a penalty? They can if they have it clearly defined in the rule book on what, hey, this is level one that only results in the 15 yards and automatic first down. But hey, you know what? And you can create it like an unsportsmanlike conduct rule to where, yeah, you know what? If I'm a defensive back and I get called for a targeting one foul twice in a game, yeah, it automatically gets updated to a targeting two, and I got to sit out the next two quarters, just like they do in basketball, where if you get called for two flagrants or if you get called for a flagrant two, you're gone.
Yep.
Like I think there's other rules in various other sports that it's okay. College football can still be the leader of the pack and the big bad leader, even if they adopt other rules from other sports. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, Peyton Borders, the Husker men's basketball recruiting coordinator, joins us. We'll talk UCLA tomorrow. That's a 1 o'clock tip off on Fox, nationally televised game from Pinnacle Bank Arena. If you're the first 1500 fans, you get a coffee mug that says the world's best fan. On top of that, we'll talk Bryce Williams, Raleigh Wooster, what they have meant to the program going forward. We'll ask him some various questions. Also, Peyton played a part in a basketball coaches academy over the summer and was one of the 50 invites, only 50 coaches across the entire country, across men's and women's basketball, were invited to this academy. And I want to hear what Peyton learned from that. So we'll be joined by Nebraska men's basketball's recruiting coordinator, Peyton Borders, when we come back. It's the happy hour. One final time on a Friday. Step aside on 93.7 The Ticket.
Download our app by searching 93.7 The Ticket in your app store to stay in touch and listen all day long wherever you are. More of the happy hour is next on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.